come with me? Will you bind your sword to my quest?
The idea of going there isn't just a bad idea. It's bizarre.
No one asked for your pity, Picard. Just as no one asked for your help.
One impossible thing at a time.
Where did that come from?
Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton performing a Borg ritual in his socks.
And also joining us, we have a special guest handing out copies of Three Musketeers, Barry Link.
And coming to you, hopefully not from the Kelvin timeline.
Oh, ouch, wow, burn. That's cold.
Yeah, Barry, great to have you back on the show. We were intrigued the first time you guested here. I think Cam and I, we just wanted to pick your brain for about an hour about what it was like to watch like Next Generation back in the day, yeah, like episode to episode, not knowing in season one what greatness would lay ahead, but you had a while to go there.
Yeah, it was really fascinating because we often like to do that, you know, just the brain experiment of like, what would it have been like to watch this? But you could actually tell us.
Well, it was a funny experience, you guys asking me that, because it felt like a millennial asking a boomer, like, what was it like at Woodstock?
Well, a lot of people come up to Tyler and I and be like, what was it like to watch Enterprise?
Those UPN commercials,
that's
man.
Right.
That's all I think about.
That's right.
Yeah. So now I think it's fitting that we get you back on. And, you know, 30 years later, you're now watching Picard on TV once again. Could you ever have imagined that being the case?
No, and it actually kind of scares me that you've just brought that up, that it's actually been 30 years.
Yeah.
So that's like, that's a whole chunk of my life right there. And yeah, you're giving me chills now, Tyler.
Well, speaking of chills, what do you think of the first three or four episodes of Star Trek Picard at this point? Be totally honest, because Cam and I, we liked episodes one and three.
It's been a roller coaster.
We were very mixed on episode two, but we can get into episode four. But where are you so far with this the series, Barry?
So far, I like it.
Yeah.
Like most Star Trek shows, the new ones that come along, I don't really have any expectations because in the past I've been burned before. Mm-hmm. And it always seems to have taken new shows a little while to generate their stories and generate their worlds. Mm-hmm. But so far, I'm liking this. I think that the first two episodes would have been better served as one episode. I'm surprised they didn't do it as a two-hour premiere. Because, the first episode was good. I liked the world. I liked the characters. I liked being back with Picard. And then they had that great reveal. And then it's like, okay, we're done. See you next week. And you're kind of hanging. And then the second episode, it just felt like, okay, we're going to throw a bunch of background in here to explain more stuff. They could have tied those two together, and I think that would have been more satisfying.
I think for me and Cam, if we had seen them back to back, we would have kind of left that two episode premiere a little bit down on it. I think we were pretty high on episode one,
yeah,
and then we just hit that exposition dump that was episode two. But we're not nearly as lucky as a friend of the podcast, Jay Gamble, who got to go see three episodes in a row at the Los Angeles premiere a couple weeks ago. So this is his first new episode that he's been waiting for, what, like a month to watch at this point, which
that's
is hilarious.
Right. Yeah. I do wonder, though, going back to that second episode being frustrating, I think there's ways to write that so it's not as exposition heavy. I feel like when there's that much talking, there's ways to streamline it. So,
They did their best with, Picard acting as CSI Matlock Man in the Boston apartment.
Did they do their best?
They tried. But we could kind of tell the editing was a little strange there. I think they knew that they had not quite a dud on their hands, but something that was a little bit weaker than what we were getting in the first episode. So
I didn't really pay attention to the plot very much or the pacing. I was really interested in the world building. And I think that's one of the things I like most about this series compared to past series.
Yeah, getting into it, I mean, one of the things I jotted down in my notes is it really truly feels as if Picard had a life beyond the Enterprise, you know, post-movie era. And I really do appreciate that about the series. It feels as if we saw a man evolving beyond what we knew him as, just as kind of this stodgy kind of captain for so many years. I think what you're saying, though, about the world building, the show is doing a very good job at that, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's letting us have a look at how people live in the future. That's one of the, I think, the weaknesses of Star Trek traditionally is we don't know what their lives look like. You know, what do they do for fun? Like, do they go to
trombone movies?
Or yeah, I mean, they always had these kind of, you know, sort of character quirks and so forth. And for the most part, those were well done. But we really didn't know what society looked like. Whenever they went to a planet, it always felt like they were landing in kind of yet another version of a Florida retirement village.
It always looked really boring.
Yeah.
Like when you'd see just day-to-day life, when they would go down to a city, you'd be like, boy, I would not want to be there.
Yeah.
Well, if that's how you really felt, Cam, I don't know why you dress like the people from Justice all the time. Like,
and I'm always like just running laps around the apartment room.
Yeah. It's really distracting, by the way. So, sorry, Barry, I interrupted.
Get out of my flower pot.
So you're getting a look at how they live. I mean, like the opening scene, I think it was like the very opening scene, you're in Greater Boston. And mm-hmm. the fact that Boston is mentioned, the fact that you see a city, it felt like Blade Runner to me, that opening scene, you know, the montage of the city. And you didn't see that, or you don't see that in Star Trek very much. You don't have a sense of communities and larger urban centers. And the fact that they're in an apartment, and just hanging out, drinking wine, and you know, making flirty talk and talking about their careers, it felt more like people who had lives that weren't somehow tied to everyone wants to be in a starship.
Well, you mentioned off the top, you kind of made a dig at the Kelvinverse, but I thought that something the Kelvinverse did do was when they would show Earth or something, it actually looked like a place I wouldn't mind visiting, which, you know, a lot of other Star Trek shows, as we said, didn't.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. And then, of course, the Kelvin timeline went and screwed everything else up. But
I feel like if you're going to take some elements from the most recent Star Trek previous to the Kurtzman stuff, I think those are good things to take from those Kelvinverse movies versus maybe some of the other, you know, the things that people don't like as much.
Yeah, no, fair enough. And the other thing is, of course, you know, with the world building, and I don't know if you guys have talked about this, is they had a direct reference to it in this episode, was cash. Money.
Yeah.
And then there's one of the, again, you know, the weaknesses of Star Trek, and I've always preferred it as a world that I would want to go to compared to Star Wars, you know, the Great Schism. There's never an explanation of how the economy works. They've got careers, they've got jobs, and presumably there's like a private sector as opposed to everything being run by the Federation, but it's never been clear. How does Picard get his stuff? How does he get this big vineyard and all this kind of thing?
One of my favorite throw lines from Deep Space Nine was when Nog and Jake were discussing that very thing, and Nog was saying, like, how does this even work? You're on, like, a bartering system, and Jake says, we strive to better ourselves. And then he kicks up his feet, and I'm just like, okay, that does not explain how the economy actually works. You're now in a bartering system trying to get like a great, a baseball card for his dad.
And also it really also raises questions with last week's episode where Raffi is like, after Starfleet, I had nothing. And she's living in the equivalent of a trailer in, you know, although it looked very luxurious and I would happily live there, but compared to Picard's estate.
His inherited estate as well. Yes. So does that socialism experiment, is that really persistent, as we know it in the UFP? I don't think it is.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of question marks about how this actually works on a practical level here in this universe.
Rios mentions that his services are very expensive. So that's the first time I think that someone has been introduced who said no, you know, or at least a major character, that this is going to cost you a lot if I'm going to help you out on your adventure.
So if we jump off that world-building aspect, this episode kicks off in another flashback. It's the fourth time we've got some sort of flashback. I think this is how they're doing teasers, and I can kind of dig that.
Do you think it's going to be every episode of the season?
Well, so far, that's how it's worked out.
They may run out of material by the time they get to, you know, episode 10.
Okay, let's cut to the chase here. This episode ends with Seven of Nine appearing. Do you think that do you think that we might get an appearance of what Seven of Nine was doing 15 years ago? Like, I wonder if they want to fill in a bit of that backstory, because I think many a fan would be yearning for that.
Well, we complain all the time about episodes that, you know, tell and don't show.
Yeah.
I would be more than happy if in the next episode they have a flashback for the first 3 minutes just showing what Seven was up to in that period versus her sitting in a chair telling Picard what she was up to.
It'd just be horrible if it was the pre-Voyager era and we just watched her doing like drone duties for like the 4 minute teaser. So hopefully not. But
or sweeping up the deck or something.
Or doing Borg rituals in her socks.
Yeah. Or telling Chakotay, it's not you, it's me.
I would love to see that scene myself. So, but yeah, we're on planets Vashti. Any relation to Jot Vash? I don't know.
Or
Vash itself. Yeah. But planet Vashti, and it's a refugee camp here. They draw the parallels to what's going on very on the nose with regards to what's going on.
Very subtle, Tyler. I don't know what you're talking about.
But today's world, of course. And so I can appreciate what they're doing. I think there's room for a little nuance here, but I think you don't convince Patrick Stewart to come back and do Star Trek yet again if we're not actually talking about what's relevant in today's society versus what's going on in this 24th, soon to be 25th century setting. So I can appreciate that. And look, he even has to spell it out. He says, I can't believe what this has succumbed to, it, where there's like racial strife going on in this very colony. We even see like a sign that says Romulans only, which is not something that we would expect to see, at least in the Star Trek universe, but this persists within other species outside the UFP. So I think there's a really interesting, like you say, Barry, again, the world building process that we're getting here. This feels like a lived in world, which I don't think Star Trek's been great at that. You called it like a retirement community for most of those episodes. I cannot disagree with that.
Yeah, no, and this planet looks especially lived in because, of course, in the flashback, we get it when it's in its early days and it still seems like, you know, it's fairly prosperous considering it's a refugee settlement. Mm-hmm. And then when Picard comes back, of course, things have gone downhill and there's this strife and everything is dusty. And even the sign that says Romulans only is like just a crappy metal sign.
People look a lot less happy.
Yes, they don't say hello to strangers, whereas, you know, Picard shows up and the kids run toward him, everyone's happy. But if I can just pivot for a moment, just when Picard comes in and he is greeted and he talks to the kid and then he talks to the assassin nuns, the warrior nuns, did you buy his character? When you look,
about Elnor or Picard?
Picard. Like when you think of Picard and how he presented himself and the person he was and how he was perceived in Next Generation, and then even through the movies, and then now where he's kind of like Uncle Picard or Grandpa Picard, he's very jolly compared to the way he was. And I'm not saying characters can't change or evolve, but did that jar you at all?
That actually did really stand out to me. I mean, partly because of the outfit. But also, it really actually made me think back to the movie Star Trek Generations, in which Picard, you know, goes to the Nexus famously, and we get this revelation like Picard always secretly wanted a family and children. We know that obviously he doesn't have that, but you get to see how there was some warmth to him that maybe he wasn't showing to the crew, because when you look at TNG, it was such a professional situation. But here we see him like with this young, you know, boy, this Romulan, Elron, or was it Elnor?
Elnor.
I think it's very curious how close it is to Elron, considering the elfish-like look to him. But anyways.
I noticed that too.
Yeah, very Lord of the Rings. But anyways, you get to see maybe this warmer Picard that maybe always kind of existed, or at least that he discovered he actually wanted to have. And this is several years after Nemesis. So
I did the math. We were talking about that last week. It's about 5 years after we last saw him. So within Nemesis, that was 2379. So right now in 2384.
So like, what is a Picard this much, you know, further down the road after having the experiences in the Nexus and mellowing maybe with age and probably examining his life a lot after being basically kicked out of Starfleet, although not when this episode starts.
Like, I agree, though. I mean, this seems like a different character. I can do the math in my head and figure this is a guy who's had time to reflect on what's been going on in his life, especially as we get the sense, though, that the family is broken. You know, the TNG family. We have Troy and Riker. They're off on the Titan after Nemesis. Mm-hmm. Data has just passed away. It sounds as if Picard almost immediately stuffs B4 into a box and kicks him off the ship. So it's Geordi and Beverly and Picard hanging out on the Enterprise for a couple years before Picard's an admiral. You know, I think he realizes his family that he's had for about 15 years, he has to move on. And I can kind of make the leap in my head as to where he is right now.
And look at scenes too, like the wedding scene in Nemesis, or also the perfect moment experiences in Insurrection. I do think Picard has kind of learned more about like the intimate life and the importance of that. So I could go along with it, but I definitely agree that if you were to jump from just like the TNG series into this one, it would feel very weird.
Yeah, going from, say, Code of Honor into this, you're like, how do you make that connection? So,
a very common occurrence.
Yes. Hey, time travel, man. What can you say? So, yeah, I also wonder, like, more holistically, like, what this episode was about. And I actually do appreciate that they're doing a good job at, like, establishing who these characters are, what drives them. You know, I understand what is kind of the inner turmoil within Elnor. He doesn't really have a purpose in life because he can't be part of this, you know, Romulan warrior nun clan. We also continue to establish Rios as a character who seems quite tormented by the thoughts of death. I think the actor must be having a blast getting to play about like every single hologram imaginable, whether it's a hospitality hologram. We are also introduced to Emmett, the tactical hologram as well. He was doing the Irish accent and the English accent the week previous. I think this guy's having a good fun. But out of the characters that we were introduced last two episodes, Barry, are you connecting with any of them? Are you curious about what's in store for their journeys at this point? Or are you kind of thinking, well, I don't know, is this just supposed to be TNG light?
I think Rios the most, the captain. And of course, the actor is having a lot of fun, like you said, because he's playing the different hologram characters. Although it took me two episodes to figure out it was the same actor.
Okay, right.
Maybe that's because I'm just not very good at observation, or because the fact he did a good job of doing the different characters.
If I'm being honest, it took me two scenes in the first episode before I was like, oh, wait a minute. It is like, I don't think it immediately jumped out to you either, Cam.
No, I mean, I was wondering initially why they had someone look so much like the actor, but then it was like, oh, I get what they're doing. But they don't underline it in a way where you can understand why someone might not pick up on that.
Yeah, so we're all in the same boat with that.
It's all also kind of creepy that of all the human forms that you would pick to be your hologram, you'd pick yourself.
I would do it.
I think this guy might have some ego issues.
Could
those
be.
Are there. I mean, although he seems actively annoyed by himself all the time, so there's some psychological underpinnings there.
Self-hate, perhaps?
Yeah.
That's why he's choosing these holograms that annoy him?
Yes. But just going off of this, I feel like this character, there's actually some really interesting things to talk about in terms of his personality, which I'm not getting out of some of the other characters. So I think I agree with you. Like, Rios is the one really standing out to me. Raffi as well.
Yeah, but does Rios' ship have a name? Like, I cannot recall it.
They may have dropped it once, and if they did, I missed it.
Yeah.
It does, but that's only because I looked on Wikipedia.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
I believe it's La Serena or something like that, but it's not. You know, and speaking of the ship, do you guys watch The Expanse?
I haven't seen it, but I've heard good things.
Same.
Okay, so the bridge of his ship looks a lot like the top level, not a lot, but it's reminiscent of the top level of the ship in The Expanse. And I'm not saying that there's a direct, you know, that they copied or anything, but I just found that kind of interesting. But also, it's not a big ship. We've only seen like three or four people on it, and presumably just he and his hologram can run the whole thing.
Right.
Why do they have a holodeck on this ship? And where do they put it?
My sense, though, is like the holographic projectors are just so ubiquitous. Like, it's been, 15, almost 20 years since Voyager ended.
Yeah.
And at that point, we were seeing them put holographic projectors in sick bays. I think it's possible that they could just extend it quite easily and, like, quite cost-effectively at this point. So
it just could be anywhere.
Yeah.
Right in your room. You know, how many movies have you seen, non-Star Trek related, where, say, the entire wall of someone's room is like basically a holodeck, right? So it makes sense that in Star Trek we would have had the entire area.
Could be. It felt like they dedicated a whole room, though, to Picard's simulation.
And in all fairness, they do have the holographic crew members that do appear throughout the ship.
Yeah.
So that kind of spells out to me that this guy, he's investing big in holographic projectors across his ship. I doubt that it's going to be the same for all the ship because you're actually making me bring up another thing I jotted down in my notes, Barry, though. It's like I'm wondering more and more if you can just get holograms to replace all the useful crew members on a ship. What is the point of having people aboard these ships to do all of these things? And it's also bringing up a lot of these questions about synthetic life that they were addressing with androids specifically. but it's like, are they just there as our servants? And what kind of implications does that mean for labor, for example, at this point? So I don't know. Like, it makes me kind of depressed to think that everybody could just essentially be replaced by a hologram or an android within this universe that they've developed here. I'd
like to just announce now that next week the podcast will be me and my hologram.
I think you can just replace me with like drops that you've culled from about like 6 years worth of podcasting.
Or just a soundboard.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah. So the continued adventures of this, one of the things that I think Cam and I, we're on the same page with Discovery, though, is there's not enough exploration going on in that show. I do like the fact that we at least got to, quote unquote, explore a planet, get the sense of it as well. Mm-hmm. It sounds as if we're not making it Free Cloud just yet, so that's going to be another opportunity to visit Free Cloud, whatever it may be. I don't know if it's a space station, if it's a planet, or if it's all just in our mind at this point, but I do like the idea that we've been stuck on Earth for 3 episodes in a row. They know that we want to do other planets. They know that they can travel through vast quantities of stuff to get there.
Yes.
As one Dr. Girardi was explaining, and kind of have fun with this universe as well.
I also appreciated, though, that when it came to visiting another world, we spent our time there. That's something like Discovery. I've loved a lot of what Discovery has done, especially in the aesthetics of the worlds they've visited. But a lot of the time, it's like, we have 42 minutes and we're going to do like 5 different stories going on. So we're going to spend 6 minutes on this planet. Whereas like Picard is taking its time in exploring these worlds so far. So yeah. I do appreciate that.
Yeah. So for you, Barry, I'm curious about your own kind of journey with other series as well, because I do think we don't want to leave off Seven of Nine too much. We mentioned it at the top there, but were you a Voyager watcher as well when it was airing?
I was for the beginning, and then I kind of fell off about halfway through, then I picked it up again for the last little bit, because I wanted to see how it ended.
Yeah, so if Seven of Nine character does resonate with you when pops up on screen. Did we all know who the pilot was, like, at the very end of this episode?
Yeah, that was obvious, okay.
Actually, I gotta say, it didn't jump out as much to me. I mean, I don't know why. It just wasn't, like, as exciting an entrance as I expected, maybe, for Seven of Nine.
Like, we all noticed that her name was in the credits, and then I was thinking about it. I'm like, well, we're at the end of the episode. She still hasn't appeared, and they're like, I can't wait to find out who he is. Yes, he's a very good pilot. I'm just like, okay, we know that you're talking about a she in this situation. So I'm intrigued by what Seven could bring to the table here. Like, this is a character who has like 20 years to have gone through all of this change, finding her humanity more and more. We only spent 3 years with her, you know, back in the day, or 4 years, I should say. So seeing her interactions with Picard, they still have the fact that they were both former drones in common. I think that's definitely some history that they can share together. It seems as if Seven already knows who Picard is, although it appears everybody in this universe knows who Picard is, no matter what. So
it's like our universe.
Based on all the marketing we saw around town. So I was impressed by that myself. So yeah, Barry, you're on board with whatever Seven of Nine could bring?
Oh yeah. No, I mean, obviously the Borg story and learning more about the Borg is fundamental to this whole series. And, you know, the Borg is fundamental to Picard, the character. And initially when I saw the cube, I think in the first episode, I kind of went, oh no, like we're going back to this again. But then they've done a really nice job of teasing out really what's at stake here, because it seems to be about what the effect on being a Borg is for individuals, and people may or may not be recovering their humanity. And of course, that is central to Picard's character in the original series, and then through some of the movies, in which, you know, it was a shattering effect on his psyche, a shattering effect on even his professional career, because you know that people didn't trust him for a while, for a long time. And I'm wondering if it still sticks with him. And I don't know if you have talked about this in a previous episode where he has some kind of medical condition. And he's got to get out and adventure. And I think you're quite right that this is a series about exploration. And again, that's fundamental to The Next Generation. I think it's fundamental to Star Trek itself. And it's fundamental to Picard's character. He's an explorer, and this is his last chance. But he's got this condition. And is that... I know in the original series, they mentioned that he had some kind of genetic pre-existing condition that was going to eventually catch up with him. Are they referring to that because they haven't said it explicitly, or is it something to do with the Borg? If it's the latter, I'm wondering if it's going to tie in with whatever this sort of deepening mystery is with reclaiming people who are formerly drones and recovering their humanity, and then how Seven of Nine fits into that. Because she was like, what, almost one of the first success stories.
Yeah.
Aside from Hugh, who I didn't realize when I was watching that last episode, that's Hugh.
Right.
Well, we were wondering how obvious it was to people at that point, because they didn't explicitly say his name, although when you watch the previouslys, it does say his name quite explicitly. Yeah. So so we didn't want to spoil it for our last guest who didn't pick up on the fact that it was Hugh.
Yeah.
But we've seen him marketed like that, and so they weren't trying to keep it a super secret, though.
And he's also not in this episode, so it's odd to have the name of, if it is a reveal, to have the character pop up in a fairly large role in an episode and then just vanish the next episode.
Yeah, I'm positive he'll be back.
But, oh yeah, he'll be back, but maybe they assumed that people would really know who that was? I really don't know.
He looks a little different. From the last time we saw him in just Descent Part 2. Yeah. But going off what you're talking about, though, Barry, with regards to Picard's condition. So the whole parietal lobe thing, from what I recall, though, is actually brought up in the alt future of All Good Things, the series finale. And so I think what it is saying is, like, much of this future still comes to bear. And that's what he's going to have to deal with. And then, Cam, I think you were speculating as well that maybe it's kind of some entanglement with the Romulans or the Borg that will make Picard realize, well, maybe this is going to be able to heal Picard, and he's going to have to kind of come to terms with whatever, I don't know, feelings that he has about his experience with the Borg as well. So,
and also, I mean, there's all this experimental research and, these medical procedures being done related to Borg. Could that tie into what Picard's going through? We'll see. We'll see. Because, I mean, I feel like, you know, Soji is going to contribute in a big way to the series, and we don't know how yet. So
I hope they don't. I mean, I don't know how this series is going to end. Obviously, it just started. But I hope that they don't, because there's that poignancy about Picard. It's his last exploration. It's his last trip. And he knows he's only going in one direction. And that's like, you know, talking about 30 years between watching The Next Generation for the first time and now watching some of the same characters appear in a new series. You know, that's a long span of time. And when you get older, you realize you're only going in one direction.
Yeah.
And one of the most poignant lines that stood out for me in this episode was where Picard is recruiting Elnor, the samurai elf wannabe nun assassin.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where he says, you know, when Elnor says, "What do you want me?" He says, "Well, because I'm an old man and you're a young man." That actually answers one of the questions. I think initially when I first heard of this series is, well, Picard's really old, and what can you really do with an old guy? And the answer is you surround him with other characters who are vital and interesting and motivated by him.
And it also
fellowship
explains,
almost.
Yes. But, yeah.
But it also explains why he's not, say, recruiting one Worf for a mission like this or one Geordi. They're both getting up there in years. Although I think Klingons definitely age a little differently. But I don't want them to have just like a total retreat of like TNG with all the same characters coming back again and again. Although that said, I was totally delighted to see Hugh in the last episode. I can't wait to see what they do with Seven of Nine. But and we also know that there's going to be Riker and Troy cameos at the very least, based on the marketing. So no spoiler there.
I thought there might be a Barclay one, though, because, you know, Picard's doing Three Musketeers. I thought it was a Hollow Pursuits shout out.
That'd be quite amazing. So yeah, and so moving forward on his journey, we're getting time with the characters. Like, one, Girardi did not have much to do in this episode, so I think it was smart of them to give her a lot of time with Rios at the very start as she's debating how boring it is just to be in outer space, where we think of it as like this grand adventure. Why wouldn't
well,
you want
maybe
it?
Maybe you do.
For listeners, Cam, the idea of going to space makes him sick to his stomach.
There is no way you could ever drag me up there.
But for viewers, though, you're watching space showcased in a way that's supposed to be all about it, the adventure, the grandeur, all about it. And Girardi's just saying, like, I don't know, I'd rather be doing my studies in Okinawa. I'd rather be on a planet. This is kind of boring, just like staring at the same bulkhead again and again. These like smaller, more human moments. This is the stuff that I'm digging way more than some of that exposition that we're getting in episode 2. Like, that's the stuff that's working for me. And Rios got to play off of her. I just hope they don't overdo it with Rios as the tortured soul. Yeah. Emo Rios.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, or no, is that why Emmett is called that? It's not actually Emmett, it's Emo.
Maybe.
Yeah.
So. Dr. Girardi, though, is really suffering from the problem in that Alison Pill is given quirky dialogue and everything. She really has nothing to do.
Not at this point.
Not at this point. But yeah. We're four episodes in still, and this character will show up, make some quips, and then stand back while other people do things. So I'm still waiting for this character to pop.
Well, I mean, she's working for me, but I also understand, like, what is she supposed to do at this point, though?
Right.
And they are giving her those lines to work with. And so it's like, I have total confidence that being the utilitarian aspect of her characters, it is going to come to fruition in the next few episodes. This is about, like, androids. She's the android specialist. Yes. So that's why I'm not very worried about the direction of the character.
She still needs to meet up with an android. I feel like that's when she'll really come into her, you know, where her presence really pays off.
And that's going to be interesting. I'm wondering what your thoughts are, Barry, with regards to this journey of Daj and Soshi and what we got in this episode, specifically with toxic boyfriend Narek and what's going on here. This is a bizarre relationship that I don't really care about whatsoever.
It's not working for me at all. And I don't even mean just in regards to the toxic stuff. But Barry, what has been your thoughts on this?
Well, I should point out that I did see on Twitter people talking about the hot Romulan. So presumably it's about Narek. So there could be a constituency out there that's not us that digs this to some extent. But yeah, I have the same reaction. You know, they had this kind of lovely moment where they did the sliding on their socks on a presumably slippery part of the Borg cube.
Well, it's how you entered my apartment to record this, Gary. So
I was surprised that they copied that. Yeah, yes. Yeah.
He's on a wireless mic now, just doing it back and forth across the room.
Oh, it's lovely. Yeah.
And he's just like Tom Cruise.
risky business. Yeah. And, you know, I thought they actually did it well in terms of the choreography and how they shot it, but I didn't really care about the characters and the experience they're going through. It would have been more fun if it had been Girardi and Rios or something like that, you know, someone who maybe they have some chemistry there. I do appreciate they're going back and forth between those two storylines, but you know, when I was coming here, I was thinking the show could have gone a lot faster if they did not even introduce the whole Borg cube until like three or four episodes in and reveal that timeline in a big reveal later on and just kind of focused on Picard and the people around him, get off of Earth faster, spend more time with these characters, and then they show up with these other people. So that the character of Soji becomes a mystery. She's just like this name and they're searching for her and then finally they find her. But they've decided to do it, you know, back and forth. And I like the stuff, the sense of mystery with this Borg cube. But yeah, the boyfriend-girlfriend thing, it works only to the extent that obviously he's conflicted. Although he's conflicted very quickly.
Yeah.
And for a professional secret agent or whatever he is, that's kind of like, who gave him this job? Like, come on, that's fundamental.
His sister, who has a very odd relationship with her brother.
Sister in quotation marks, maybe.
Okay.
Who knows? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that whole scene, though, where they're sliding, it just reminded me of, I felt like they wanted to do something almost like Titanic in, like, the dancing scene, you know, the big Irish dancing scene, where it's, like, this free-spirited young people having fun, but boy, did it fall flat for me. I just feel like
they're saving that scene for Patrick Stewart to do the Irish jig when he arrives on the Borg cube.
He's going to Fairhaven, folks.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the problem with me, for me is, like, to buy into this sort of, like, scene or just this ongoing relationship, the characters have to grab me. And the fact is, the way they were set up initially, right in, like, episode one, I didn't really buy into their instant connection that was, like, delivered at the very end of episode one. Next thing you know, in episode two, I remember they were in bed. And I remember even you, Tyler, were like, I guess they're in bed for some reason? Like,
some reason, they didn't even know each other.
Exactly.
And she even said, I don't even really know you. And I'm like, yeah, like, what attracted you to him? Like, I'm not saying people can't, like, hook up, but it's like, give me some reason to, like, some sort of connection. Like, do you guys like the same foods or something like that?
Yeah.
There's just absolutely nothing.
And even in this episode, she's just like, they're like asking questions about each other, but they seem like almost like first date type questions.
It's like we've been on a cycle of 50 first dates with Adam Sandler and like Drew Barrymore. And it's just like they keep repeating, oh, small talk, small talk, small talk.
So. Yeah. And the characters aren't being given a lot of dimension at all. They're being presented as very mysterious, both of them. And so it's hard to buy an emotional connection between the characters or feel emotion ourselves for what they're going through. And I do think like a toxic relationship can be like fascinating to watch play out in a movie.
I watch
or TV show.
New relationships all the time, Cam.
People's in this podcast every week, just the two of us. But I mean, I think that can be really fascinating if it has some insight and is actually saying something or seems to understand the psychology of the situation. In this case, this just feels almost like time filler and just like, you know, look at the two of them having fun. Now cut to him in the shadows looking tormented and his sister like being really weird.
And it takes away from spending time with the Borg.
Yes.
That's the fun part of this storyline is, you know, when they're recovering drones, then they're taking implants out of people. And then there's this mystery of the ship and what happened to those the crew and so forth. That's more of what I want to know about rather than, well, you know, does he like her or doesn't he like her? And why is his sister so jealous?
The best Borg scenes, I think, were the ones featuring Hugh, though. Like him, like, bouncing off of Soji. I think that those two actors actually had more chemistry than the Narek and Soji as
You want to see? You want to see Hugh doing slides down the hallways?
Yes. That'd be amazing. Well, I'm okay with the Borg being a potential storyline here, but it just, I think the problem is it's suffering from the criticism that they threw at Deep Space Nine back in the day, whereas the Enterprise, it's moving, it's going forward. We're seeing that with Picard, whereas, you know, Deep Space Nine is very stationary, and it took a while for Deep Space Nine to kind of figure out, well, you have to make it much more character-based, and you have to be invested in the characters that are passing through the station, living on the station. And I'm not really feeling that with this stationary adventure that's going on in the Borg cube. I just feel like there's a lot of mystery elements. And look, if your mystery isn't all that intriguing, then I have a tough time being invested in what's going on with these characters here.
And I mean, the Rizzo stuff, I mean, she is definitely camping it up big time. Like, this is full on, like, Cruel Intentions or Dangerous Liaisons here, like Glenn Close in that film. And, like, you can tell she's having fun. But it also sometimes feels to me a little bit of the Kurtzman factory trying too hard. Like, look how edgy we are.
Yeah.
And I'm not buying it really on a character level because Narek isn't grabbing me at all. So I don't feel his torment because I don't know who he was before all this. It's like he was presented as kind of sketchy and he's still sketchy. And now we see that his sister, who's also sketchy, is just like needling him.
But don't we, all three of us, feel as if like we kind of know what Narek's journey is already going to be? It's like he was sent on a mission, he falls in love with his subject, and now it's about his kind of redemption. It just feels as if we've already figured out his arc in advance, and they haven't even really gotten to off first base at this point.
So, well, they've gotten past first base, Tyler.
Figuratively, yes. So... I'm hoping maybe the Borg stuff picks up in the next episode, but my suspicion is like we're gonna have just a lot more, you know, Soji and Narek hanging out in the next episode. We're gonna be off, hopefully on Free Cloud. We're gonna be dealing with Seven of Nine. All the fun stuff is gonna be on the ship. We're gonna be wishing we were on the ship some more, not hanging out in the Borg cube. And I think that's kind of disappointing because the Borg cube looks awesome. Props to the production design on that. It's been a while since that's been updated. And I'm like, wow, I'm looking at the dollars on the screen right there. I just wish they were doing something a little bit more intriguing with that particular story.
We also know, of course, we have a Riker and Troi appearance somewhere down the road as well. And again, I feel like that's going to keep this connection between the Picard characters and everything on the Borg cube separate for a while.
Do you think maybe... It's actually just his holographic room. He's like just hanging out with Troi and Riker there.
Oh, maybe. He has like hologram programs of them just to hang out with.
He's just playing cards with Data and, you know.
Yeah, I mean, why not?
Yeah, so at this
point. Or the whole thing is just him and his holodeck back in the vineyard. And that will be like season 6, the finale.
Actually, we find out the true villain is Moriarty. the finale is called Moriarty's Revenge.
If they did that, people would just be like, hats off, guys. Hats off.
I would scream. I that is the kind of storytelling I'd hate because it's just like, well, why am I invested in anything that's going on here if none of it actually matters? So I got a question for you guys. Because you were talking about the jarring factor, the believability factor of Picard's character earlier on, Barry. And when he walks to the shady Romulan bar, rips off the sign in the refugee camp, walks into this bar and starts yelling, waiter, waiter. This is a guy with a death wish? Or does he actually think that he's like somehow Elnor has followed him and he's going to entice Elnor to go on this journey or protect him? Like, I don't know what Picard was thinking. It didn't seem as if he was thinking. What did you guys make out of the scene?
Well, I mean, it was obviously so that Elnor could come back and rescue them. And
from a storytelling perspective. Like,
I know, but you could see that coming from a mile away because obviously he has to join Picard. They wouldn't have spent all that time with him. And obviously, you know, there had to be some kind of dramatic moment between them because they've got this sort of fraught history that the young Elnor believes that Picard abandoned him. So obviously when Picard went in there and started, you know, kicking dust in people's faces and so forth, I mean, yeah, okay, they're setting it up so Elnor can come and rescue him. So that was no surprise. But yeah, that was kind of weird because, again, that's not really Picard. Picard would just kind of sit there and let them come to him. He might still want to provoke them, but he would do it in a much more subtle way as opposed to like being an American tourist, like, waiter, give me my my beer. What are you doing?
Like, he was trying to provoke them. And
then acting surprised when they were angry and challenged him to a duel. He's like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, at the time, I was thinking, like, you know, at the start of the episode when he showed up in the flashback, I'm like, Picard's taking this cowboy diplomacy thing a little too far with this outfit. But then this almost felt like an extension of that. Like, you know, obviously there's, like, obviously racial elements in the sense of, like, him throwing down a, you know, Romulan's only sign. But it felt almost like a Western of a character just, like, strolling into a saloon he's not allowed to be at and sitting down and then challenging them, like, what? That's what it felt like.
But then, okay, so we jump to Elnor decapitating the guy.
Yeah.
But Picard is shocked that Elnor would do such a thing, and he has a talk, and I do appreciate Picard not just shrugging it off. He says to him, you can't go around killing people. But I'm like, Picard, you know what these warrior nuns are all about. Like, what did you expect to actually happen in this situation? And so, look, one of the things that kind of bugs me is when Star Trek can be a little bit callous with, like, lives and they don't acknowledge it. And Picard doesn't strike me as that kind of person. So the fact that he said, Elnor, you can't go around doing that, that does really seem like the Picard I know. But the Picard I don't know is the one who's going around kicking people over, like, tables and like, fighting with them or, like, in sword fights. Although he did throw his sword down rather quickly.
I mean, you have this Western imagery, you have this Three Musketeers stuff. That felt like that fed into what Picard was doing in that moment, to a certain degree.
For sure.
Yeah. But
how much do you think is this Patrick Stewart with his executive producer credit saying, guys, I've got an idea?
More than we even suspect.
Yeah.
But going back to that scene where, Elnor kills the guy, I kind of have an issue with that scene because the way they shoot that, it is a lingering decapitation where it's like, look at this. And then we cut to Picard being like, don't do that again. That was bad. But the filmmaking is focusing on it and being like, look how awesome this guy
is. Like, it wants to have its cake.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I know what you're saying there. So yeah. Is it complicit with the violence that it is, like, saying, oh, this is not cool?
And after you show that scene, is there any audience members out there who don't want to see this guy do stuff like this again?
Well, Cam, I already saw you making a GIF of that scene on your app right now, so there you go.
That's why I'm so distracted.
Just
yeah.
For future reference, it's incredibly distracting when we're trying to watch the show and you leap from the table and start doing the sword fighting movements along with the characters. So just don't do that in the future. That's all I'm saying.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. So, look, we've got this continuing on. You mentioned this filmmaking, of course, and this was directed by one Jonathan Frakes. We saw him already do a couple episodes on Star Trek Discovery. Again, I think this is a well-directed, solid episode. I actually think that Frakes' directing turn in that first Mirror Universe episode on Discovery, I think that's my favorite Frakes directing I've ever seen, period. We've seen him in tons of things. I think Offspring is one of the best episodes of TNG, but I'm not sure if it's the directing that jumps out to me from a visual storytelling perspective. I still dig this, you know, like, if you want to tell a story visually, which a director is supposed to do, the Elnor decapitates a guy's head. I mean, it's an effective scene, you know, like, and so props to Frakes for doing, again, that kind of Western imagery as well. Barry, are you happy to, you know, have some recognizable people behind the camera for this sort of stuff, or does it really make any sort of difference?
It's nice to have Frakes at the helm directing this because, you know, he's one of the principal characters from Next Generation, and he's established himself as a credible director over the decades. So why not? I guess, you know, as a Star Trek fan, it almost feels better if you have someone who's directing the show who knows Star Trek from the inside out, and he does. And how much power he has in terms of producers and writers, I don't know how that works, but yeah, sure.
I actually, appreciate what he did bring to this episode, because I think for a lot of directors who were handed this episode, it's kind of like, okay, I get the world building episode that's kind of just setting things up, that, you know, before the exciting stuff really happens. But I think he did a really good job in, you know, we said that the fight scene, but just like the general depiction of the world he's showcasing, it actually looked very vibrant. I thought he brought it to life in a way that actually felt immersive versus, you know, some of the other more weaker world building type episodes of previous series where it was just like Southern California in the fall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also props to him because he's also directing the actors and telling them what to do. And I think he knows how to get a good performance out of Patrick Stewart. And I mean, I totally understand you taking issue with what the character is doing in the flashbacks, how he's acting there, but or behaving there, I should say. But I'd say that Patrick Stewart's performance is actually quite good. You can still see him. They are using de-aging effects in those flashback scenes, but you do believe him as a younger man versus how he is playing it a little old at age 93 in the flash forward scenes that we're getting here. I think Frakes knows how to get a good performance out of Patrick Stewart, knowing somebody for like 30 plus years at this point. And so, you know, I hope he'll get it. I think he's doing the next episode as well.
Believe so, yeah. I think he's just doing two, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think that's going to give an opportunity to... They're well on their way on their adventure right now. And so Picard, he can have a lot more pathos to dig into moving forward, I think. And then, look, if you can get Frakes to dig that out of him, I'm all down for that.
I am curious, though, Barry, how have you felt coming back to such an older Picard? Like, did it feel shocking when you started watching, say, the first episode?
No, it did feel like coming back to the character after a lot of time had passed.
Mm-hmm.
It was immediately familiar. And Picard is my favorite captain. You know, Kirk is a close second just because original series and it's Kirk. But Picard has always, I think, been the template of the revised Star Trek that the Next Generation was. And so I did have my doubts about what they could do with the character, you know, when the character is older, because Star Trek has always been either a youthful or a middle-aged show. I guess the Kelvin timeline was the youthful one, and the rest of it was more of a middle-aged bunch of characters running around. But older characters, they haven't had a lot of, at least in terms of the TV shows, who were central to the show. And so I wasn't quite kind of sure, like, you know, the guy's like in a walker and what's he going to do, you know, run around the galaxy like that. But seeing him, it just felt like an old friend in a way. And I like Patrick Stewart. I like Patrick Stewart and just about everything that he does. So there's no barrier there to entry for me for either the character or the actor.
I think it could have come across as almost depressing to people of just being like, oh, like this character feels old. But I think they've done a good job in giving the show a lot of energy and the characters around him that youthful feel, as you said. So it kind of like lifts up his energy as a character. So I don't feel like it's kind of like, oh, we're watching like Picard Requiem.
And they also have not tried to hide it.
Yeah.
It's not like he's an old person pretending to be younger, which, you know, actors sometimes do from time to time. Like, well, The Irishman, for example, great movie, mm-hmm. but... a lot of things to say about older characters trying to act younger. Even if you magically make their faces look younger, they're still older the way they move and so forth.
And that ode to 1950s surfing movies was very jarring in The Irishman when they're trying Absolutely. To get De Niro to just rock it on that.
Why they didn't edit that out, I don't know.
I don't know. It was weird.
But on the flip side of that, I also find it frustrating, like Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, where it's Indiana Jones is back. He's a lot older in that movie, and he's making all these comments about getting older, and then it immediately cuts to him doing all the same stuff he did in the previous movies. So I like that this Picard, while we're seeing him do a bit of rambunctious stuff, we saw a fight scene last week,
yeah.
It still feels like an actor who is grounded in that sort of older age physically.
Watch next episode. It's Picard on Free Cloud swinging from the trees with the monkeys, Cam.
Oh, no.
You've jinxed it at this
no,
point.
No, no, yeah. Please, God, no.
Well, speaking of antiques, though, the Romulan Bird of Prey that showed up.
Yeah.
That look, there's absolutely no reason to have that in there other than for fan service, and I don't care. It looks amazing. I don't know why we only got so few appearances of the Bird of Prey in TOS before they... strangely started using Klingon ships for a reason that never made any sense to me.
Budget.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. But your reaction, Barry, to seeing like something that was so iconic finally being realized once again in this new era of Star Trek?
fan service. I don't, you know, fan service sometimes gets a bad rap, but I'm a fan and I like the service.
Yeah.
So, you know, and it just ties everything together. So why not?
You know, the ship, it just had its nacelle ripped off. Whoever's captaining this ship,
oh,
they're coming
back.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm very, very curious about this. And then, Cam, I'll throw that question to you as well as your thoughts about these. Are they called Federation Rangers that were alluded to as well?
I have no idea what that meant.
Okay.
It was like, okay, Federation Rangers, I guess.
I think they're like UN peacekeepers, like the Blue Helmets, maybe?
Maybe.
Maybe, I don't know.
There was a number of terms dropped in this episode where I was thinking, am I going to have to remember this?
Like Way of Absolute Candor.
Sure, and then the Day of Annihilation and all that sort of stuff.
Romulan Rebirth Movement.
Yeah, yeah.
These are all in my notes. I have not memorized this.
Yeah. But no, I mean, I was so excited to see the original Romulan Warbird because I actually have one on a invisible shelf in my living room. So, you know, it's the place where the party never stops.
It's a cloaked shelf.
Yes. I think it's actually called a floating shelf. I just made a mistake. Yeah. But yeah, regardless. Yeah, so I'm a big fan of this design. I love it on the original series. And just to see it, if they just had it pop up in a scene, you know, in a scene just flying by, I'd be like, that was awesome. But I like that they actually showed how dynamic it could be in movement, which I never got to see in the original series.
Yeah.
They would have them on the screen. There would be a battle scene, but they didn't have the budget or the technical ability to do what they could do here.
Well, it just makes me think about the way that the Enterprise-D is depicted in Generations. Like, that was the first time I've actually seen the Enterprise actually look really cool and formidable in an aerodynamic sort of way. And unfortunately, it was in a pretty crappy movie, but
yeah.
I just think with like these budgets that sometimes that the shows will get, it really makes you appreciate, like you say, like the stuff that we weren't getting back in the day. And look, I can totally understand this captain, whoever he is, he's like, that looks cool, I'm gonna refit it, give it some good engines, give it some good weapons, let's go have some fun in what's the equivalent of like kind of a hot rod on today's roads.
Well, they did name Romulan like Warlord or something that's kind of taken over this area.
Yeah.
That the Federation Rangers can't control. So maybe that's the person who was in the ship, and that's
Sela,
the person who's going to show up. Yeah,
could it be Sela?
Well, do you think it's someone of note in some way, or do you think it's kind of like the equivalent of like a Jabba the Hutt? Like he's just like a villainous crime lord character who we may encounter again, but he's not, or she is not representative of the overall arc, or a character that really has an impact.
Yeah, I think it's more like let's throw an antagonist out there that needs to be dispatched of somehow, and so.
Or it could be a future ally, because of this whole range of, you know, of Romulans that we're meeting, from allies to friends to people who are distanced now to people who are alienated to the refugees to the people that obviously have got some kind of sinister plot against the Federation or against something. So it could be one in that whole diverse range of characters, and I think maybe an ally, because they didn't kill him right away.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not clear exactly how the fight started, because we just suddenly went from one scene and then we're in this fight. I guess it was an extension of what happened on the surface, but it just felt like whoever's in that ship has more at stake than just destroying Picard.
And why did the ship want to destroy Picard? Like, I know his images were going all over the comm systems, but there must be a reason why somebody has it out for Picard, who was ostensibly trying his damnedest to save all, like, millions and millions of these refugees.
That's what I don't get. The Romulans are pissed off because the Federation rescued some of them and then stopped. And mm-hmm. they're really pissed off. First of all, why couldn't they rescue themselves? I don't know if that's ever been explained.
Well, even that Romulan senator, he was explaining like how the Federation made us doubt our ingenuity, and how dare you? And,
like, they didn't have any ships?
Yeah.
I did like the name of the what they call it, the Wallenberg class ships that they used. I thought that was a nice historical reference. So obviously they're using some, you know, real world parallels there.
Like Donnie and...
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And
loved him in Boogie Nights.
Yeah, it was excellent.
That's Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah, Donnie Wahlberg wishes he was in Boogie Nights.
Yeah.
Donnie Wahlberg was in Band of Brothers, though, right?
He was.
Yeah.
And Saw 2.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. It's a direct comparison to Saw 2. I love
that's right.
That reference. Yeah.
The twist is going to be something else, guys.
But yeah, the Romulans just seem so helpless in the face of presumably a catastrophe they could see coming for some time, because obviously the Federation expending enormous resources to build ships to save them, and the Romulans just kind of waiting for the ships to arrive.
Yeah.
And then still a lot of them survived and they're still pissed off.
I'll say this. I do appreciate that they are giving a lot more nuance to Romulan society, though, because I think one of my big complaints is that it seems as if all species are kind of monolithic in nature. You know, all Klingons are warriors. All Romulans are liars. All Ferengi are greedy. Look, they made the Ferengi have a lot of nuance within different species. We saw the Klingons develop that as well, but the Romulans have never really gotten that same sort of shake. And look, we're introduced to warrior nuns in this. We're introduced to former senators. We know, well, we've heard the word Tal Shiar bandied about many a time at this point. So I think we're finally doing right by the Romulans. It's just taken, well, I guess almost 65 years, but yeah. I'll take it.
And also they often had Romulan representatives that were like Sela or, you know, Picard's clone, where they don't even really look like Romulans, really. Like, they often would just, like, put a representative who didn't really look like a Romulan, be like, yeah, they're the leader of the Romulans.
Sure.
We were like, okay, sure. I like that this has kept it very Romulan-specific, even when they do throw sunglasses on them.
Do you think that we're going to get a Reman appearance at any point?
I would hope so.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, Enterprise had Remans in it as well. So, like, I am hopeful they kind of fold them into the continuity for Picard and going forward through the Kurtzman era. I think that'd be great.
I want Sochi to rip off her mask, and she's a Reman underneath.
Hold the phone. What if the pilot of that Romulan ship is a Reman?
That would be cool.
We never saw them, so they're definitely keeping it as some sort of potential mystery.
Bring back Ron Perlman.
Sure.
I don't know.
Why not? I had to think, though, as I was watching this episode, and we're seeing all this, where the Romulans are at. You know, obviously, they're on, you know, Starfleet. They've infiltrated Starfleet and everything. This is a mess. The Romulans are in a messy, messy situation. This cannot be cleaned up in 6 more episodes. Like, this does feel like an ongoing story thread in Star Trek, whether it's in Picard or some other avenue for Star Trek, because maybe even the next season of Discovery, which is set far further, but we're still seeing where the Romulans are at then. I don't know, because this feels really like just shaking everything up and throwing it out all over the table.
Yeah, and I wish there was a little bit more of direct, you know, what are the Vulcans doing about the Romulan situation? Like, we have that Commodore O deal, which, who knows what to make of it. Barry, I appreciate you wearing sunglasses in honor of her for our entire recording. It's kind of weird because, you know, we're indoors, but I think, like,
it's a little bright in here.
It is, yeah. You have sensitive eyes, I get it. But, like, with the Vulcans, though, would you not think that they're the ones really spearheading this, you know, Romulan refugee movement that's going on here? Like, I wish that they could have had some sort of Vulcan character who, I don't know, is more than just kind of a baddie, whatever we're supposed to think of Commodore O at this point. I don't know.
Or if she's even a Vulcan.
Who knows? Well, we'll
I don't
find
think
out.
So, but
yeah, yeah. It's seeming less and less likely she is, in fact, a Vulcan. But
that's a good point. I've entirely forgotten about the Vulcans watching this series. And it's almost like the producers have decided, we've done Vulcans to death throughout Star Trek. Let's just get away from that. Discovery's got Vulcans. So let's just move on to the Romulans. And I'm glad they made that choice. I'm glad they moved away from the Klingons and so forth. And you're right, the Romulans were always underserved. And they're always fascinating. I mean, when they did episodes in The Next Generation with the Romulans, I always liked them.
Right.
Because it was always a sort of like a Cold War feeling between the Federation and the Romulans. And obviously there were hints in that there was something deeper in the Romulan society. There were some, you know, some dissidents and so forth. But also a very dangerous society to operate in, and now they're adding complexity to it. I really liked the warrior nuns, because it did show that there's dimensions and that it's not just this monolithic sort of dictatorship that controls society. That you have the secret police force that, you know, obviously or presumably terrorized Romulan society, but then you had opposition against them and could go toe to toe with them.
I actually really appreciate that, you know, just going off the Romulan stuff, that when we look at DS9, you had their grand adversary was the Cardassians. And how much we got to actually see a full resolution to Cardassian society. We never got that with the Romulans on TNG, and I'm very happy we're getting it now. Like, it feels very satisfying to get.
Yeah. So maybe season two of Picard will give us the final resolution. I don't know. I know what you're saying. Look, we've got like 5-6 more episodes to go. I think there's going to be some hanging threads going forward.
I hope so. I hope they don't resolve it for a long time. I think I want to get to know Romulan society and the effects of their whole culture and civilization being shattered and having to rebuild it from the ground up and what that is like. I mean, yeah. I think they can dine out on that for a long time.
I would love to see it, but I do have real questions about Picard season two, and that when they are going to be selling this to an audience, do they want to mix it up? Like, if they're just showing more Romulan stuff, our audience is going, yeah, we saw that last season, versus like, this time we're bringing in, you know, the Q stuff always gets teased out by fans being like, oh, we're going to get the Q, right? Like, do they want a whole different angle to sell to audiences the way that Discovery changed up drastically from season one with the Klingon stuff to season two with Pike and Spock?
Well, I think we can just look forward to season two, where we dive into the Bynars as a society that needs to be fleshed out even more.
We are going to get them again, right?
Maybe.
We'll I don't even remember them.
There are those short little aliens that only commute in binary code. And, oh, yes. It's the yes. Oh, come on, you don't remember Minuet?
I remember that. Yes.
Minuet coming to season two, Picard.
Can't wait.
Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Jump on over to the Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. So we'll be back, of course, next week with the fifth episode of Picard, The Halfway Point. This is going to be really exciting to see where it's shaping up to go for the, you know, last half of the season.
Yeah. Join us on YouTube as well. We've got our channel always updated as well the night of the show. So if you want our immediate thoughts, go there. And we've got another guest coming in next week too. So I don't know. We're enjoying this journey with Picard so far almost as much as Rios is.
He's not enjoying it that much.
I'm just speaking for Barry.
Right.
Makes me want to light up a cigar and read a book about existentialism.
You're deep. You're deep, Barry.
You can, of course, find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam V as in vast quantities of stuff. Smith.
You can find me at Reportin. That's R-E-P-P as in Picard, comma, the great saints, O-R-T-O-N.
And Barry, what about you?
You can find me on Twitter at BlankWriter if you want to get boring tips about copy editing.
Awesome. Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.